70% of the national income had been spent on the war. This year, the cost of the war had meant 126 quid per head of the population. Now that gives us something to think about. We all know that this war has cost thousands of millions of pounds. And the great mystery is, where did all the money suddenly come from? In peacetime, there was never any money for vitally needed projects for the good of the nation. But when there is a war, as if by magic, the money suddenly becomes available. Why is that? Because the big bosses control the money. They control the banks, which control the full flow of money. It's mostly debt. That's to say, it only exists on paper. But they can juggle about with it as they please. In peacetime, they don't think it's worth their while to release more money. Profits can often be made better when money is tight. Scarcity means high prices. Poverty of the millions means millions for the profiteers. That's why they've always arranged things so cutely, so that the poor stay poor and the rich get even richer. But when this war came along, first it was a big opportunity for making even greater profits. And secondly, it was in fact a war for the extension and strengthening of the capitalist system. Okay, for such a good cause, the money was certainly forthcoming. Last year, according to Halifax, they took 70% of the people's money away to pay for the war. That was excellent business. This year, every man Jack was fined 126 quid. That's what it amounts to. Taxes have never been so high before. Money was mobilized to win a total victory for capitalism. And now, we've nearly won that victory. But before we win it, mates, let's think over for a minute what we workers could have done with that money, had we had it in peacetime. The money was there. It was always there. It was ours. We made it. But we couldn't get hold of it. If we could have, we could have turned this country of ours into a place where poverty and need was impossible. But when we've won, we'll go back to a land of poverty and need. Halifax said so. And we've been warned often by others that this will be the case. There will be poverty for the people because capitalism will be on top. That is the victory that we are winning, workers. But we can change it. We can change it into a socialist victory by asserting our rights now, by putting a people's government into power. Then the money will be there, earned by the people, to be spent by the people, and for the good of the people. Workers, take action now to win a socialist victory and to crush the capitalist plans for reaction. Action for socialism. And then the victory shall be for progress. Workers' Challenge will again be calling all workers of Britain and Northern Ireland on a wavelength of 213 meters tomorrow evening at 10 past 8.
With the microphone comes Edward Bowlby to speak to you on the Jewish problem.
As in the case of Britain, but previous to this war even more so, the United States is completely under the Hebrew thumb. The so-called wise men of Washington, or brain trust of the president, are all Jews. It is of additional interest to note that the financial conference at Bretton Woods, the food conference at Hot Springs, and the assistance and reconstruction conference in London were all overpoweringly represented by Jews.
Have you ever given any thought to the fate of your children? I mean, those who are old enough to have some idea of what is happening, but not old enough for military service. Do you realize that the government's evacuation plan, or should one say, their complete collapse, may have a profound effect upon your boys and girls in years to come? Do you remember how in the months before last September our people were lashed into a frenzy of neurosis by the ARP, so that when we declared war, even the Prime Minister thought it advisable to hide in a cellar for half an hour? In fact, when the Germans did not arrive to bomb London out of existence, there was a feeling of something very like disappointment amongst those who had organized the scare. However, the plans for evacuating mothers and children were put into operation even before the war started. Major generals were given the task of escorting the children to unknown destinations. The disorganization and the chaos which set in would be very difficult to describe. But it is doubtful if in the whole history of muddle there's ever been such a classical example of confusion. Either through bad organization, through negligence, or through malice, the position of the children became such that they began returning independently to the cities from which they had come. For months, the whole system of education has been put out of action, and it is estimated that at present there are more than 400,000 school children without any instruction whatsoever. You are listening to the new British broadcasting station operating on 5,925 kilocycles and on a wavelength of 50.63 meters. You will hear us again at 10:30 p.m. tomorrow. It is doubtful whether a major war leaves the social conditions of a country entirely unchanged, and it very often happens that war reveals many of the uglier features of a nation's social character. So it is with this war. It is very probable that our politicians expected the excitement of hostilities to obscure the grievances of ordinary people, to whom the mere sustenance of life itself was a problem. With certain exceptions, press has lent itself to this intention, and certainly the BBC has been used most assiduously for the purpose. Nevertheless, the whole stirring of the government's propaganda machine is unable to suppress the complaints and grievances which are increasing each day in number. The reason is that the masses of the people have never had any real heart in the war since it began. If they could have been marched into it with bands playing, drums beating, and balloons going up, if they could have been presented with some genuine and striking victory every day, they might have felt otherwise, but nothing of the sort has happened, and the extremely shifty attitude of the Admiralty in imparting information has tended to discredit all news emanating from government sources. In consequence, the German radio has gained a success and a popularity far beyond the real merits of its transmissions. It is extremely provoking for any decent Englishman to think that our own social injustices have to be brought to light by hostile wireless stations. And it is partly for this reason that we have founded the new British broadcasting station. In future, it will not be possible for the enemy to say that nobody of the people in Britain has the courage or the energy to fight against the evils which the British people have to suffer. It is with the greatest pleasure that we give publicity to a very fine effort made by the Bishop of Chichester and Miss Margaret Bondfield in opening an exhibition dealing with slum conditions. The exhibition is entitled The Homes They Come From, and its exhibits reveal the shocking state of poverty which exists in those miserable warrens where the poor live and whose landlords probably describe them as houses or dwellings.
And before we conclude this program, here are some messages from rich prisoners of war to their next of kin. The first one is from Private Thomas Smart, 293-2886. It's addressed to Mrs. T. Smart, 182 Overton Road, Kirkcaldy, Fifeshire, Scotland. Dear Cathy, I was captured by the Germans and am now in Germany and am well, so do not worry. I will write and give my address as soon as possible. All my love, Thomas Smart. And this one comes from Driver Jack Dawson, number 893390, RA. To Ma'am, Mrs. J. C. Dawson, on 60 Sinclair Road, South Chingford, London, E4. Dear ma'am, I am somewhere in Germany. I hope to write a letter soon. Best of health to all at home. I am fine. Lots of love, Jack Dawson. And here's a message from Lieutenant W. Jack, 243122. Starlock 7A. To Mrs. W. Jack, L. Gold, Clachnahary Road, Inverness, Scotland. In perfect health and well looked after. Please send toilet requisites when you receive my number. Please do not worry. Love to all, Willie. Here's one from Captain Hicks. Royal Artillery, number 98980. And his message goes to Mrs. C.J. Hicks, Leafield, Church Road, Ashford, Kent. Please don't worry, I'm quite safe and well. Present address, number, rank, name, Starlock 7A, Germany. Will write soon as possible. Fondest love, Walter. And here's a message from Captain M. P. Stott. Number EC4060, Starlock 7A, Germany. And he addresses his message to Mrs. M. P. Stott, 31 Uxbridge Road, Slough, Buckinghamshire. Please don't worry, darling. I am quite safe and well. Address is number, rank, name, Starlock 7A, Germany. All my love, dearest, Mark. Here's a message from Lieutenant P. Mulvey, 273845, also Starlock 7A, and it's addressed to Mrs. P. Mulvey, 74 Manchester Road, Accrington, Lancashire. Hello, darling. At last, a few words to let you know that I am fit and well, and in very good spirits.